This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
What if I told you this holiday season you can stuff your face with tasty, craveable snacks and wait for it, feel great? Hi, I'm Will, founder of IQBar, the only plant protein bar formulated for your body and your brain. IQBar's brain-boosting nutrients are designed to refuel, nourish, and satisfy hunger with zero sugar crash. Featuring delicious holiday flavors like gingerbread, IQBars are the less than 200-calorie snack that satisfies your sweet tooth and your protein goals. Right now, take 25% off all IQBar products and get free shipping. Also, check out our other limited edition holiday flavors like peppermint mocha jitter-free IQ Joe coffee. Clean ingredients, fantastic taste, and zero regrets. Tis the season to refuel smarter, hydrate harder, and caffeinate larger with IQBar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code AUDIO to get 25% off all IQBar products plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code AUDIO.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Hidden Gems. It is Lauren, and I wanted to bring you an interview with someone very special to me, someone that I got to know during the Richard Allen trial. Her name is Susan Hendricks, as you can see there on her screen. For those of you watching, for those of you listening, I am with the Susan Hendricks. She was an HLN anchor as well as you were on CNN, CNN Pipeline, CNN
it
anchor.
It was CNN. I was on Anderson Cooper's show for about 5 years, okay, doing the headlines and stuff like that. That was an experience. I'm grateful that I was on that show.
Yes, and that's where I first saw you. And actually, you live my dream, because when I started broadcasting, I said my main goal was to be a CNN on CNN. So you did it. I didn't. But thank you for coming on my show.
Oh my gosh. It's great to be on.
Yes. And I got to know Susan. Mostly I want to introduce, though, that you are the author. You're an author of Down the Hill. And I'll actually bring that up. Tell us a little bit about when you wrote this book, and I will share it here on the screen.
Well, Lauren, I covered the story when it broke. It was 2017, as you know, when the girls went missing. So the next day it was breaking news when they found the bodies of Abby and Libby. And that's when I first covered it on the set. And in my ear, as you know, being in the same business as I was, in my ear, the producer would say, okay, we have breaking news. They discovered these bodies, Delphi, Indiana. You'll be interviewing a man who owns the property where the bodies were discovered. So that, of course, is Ron Logan. So they say after the commercial break, you'll talk to him, mic check. And I said, Ron, can you hear me? Yes, I can. And then coming back from break, it was Ron Logan saying, nothing like this had ever happened here. And my boys would play down there. And so that was the beginning of this. Little did I know, fast forward, and HLN sent me there and said, we're going to do some more of a long form on this story. And HLN really didn't do that. We were mostly trials with Casey Anthony, Jody Arias. So I said, okay, let's go. So I went there and met then Detective Jerry Holman, Tobe Lesenby. He was the sheriff at the time. I met Becky and Mike, and I don't think I met Tara at the time. So that was the first time, and Kelsey, of course, and she took us, two photojournalists, producer, myself, to the Monon High Bridge, which looks very different than it does today. So that was the beginning of this. And they were so open and so warm, and I felt horrible seeing pictures of Libby everywhere, welcoming me and the producers and everyone into their kitchen. Mike made spaghetti and meat sauce that day. So it just made me feel so different than the other stories, because as you know, Lauren, the cycle keeps on going, the news cycle of the next story, the next story, the next story. And you're not really able to get close to anyone when you're covering these. So it was a new experience, and I felt for them, and I noticed how strong Kelsey was. I think she was, at the time I met her, 18. And fast forward, 2019, the press conference, that was the second time I went there with Superintendent Doug Carter saying,
yes,
change of direction and the new sketch.
Hidden in plain sight. Yes.
Exactly. Or we believe you lived in Delphi or from Delphi, and we believe you could be in this room. Yes. And I'll never forget that day because everyone's in the room. I'm kind of sitting on the carpeting, front row there, and thinking, oh my gosh, in this room, and taking notes. And I recorded it on my phone and I put my phone down. So I still have that, but wow. You could tell I'm writing notes. And then I was on CNN Live for the next, I don't know, 15 hours of like, oh my gosh, was he in the room and all the questions. So as I got to know these families and as I was watching, as it was occurring, the investigation, I thought this could be a book about what the families are experiencing from their point of view.
And it's an incredible book. You know, I listened to it actually on Audible because that's what we did when we were at the trial. There was no time to leisurely read, right? But I had my ears on and I was actually listening, and it was so touching to me hearing Kelsey German actually read the foreword. I was so touched by that. I want to say thank you for that. And thank you for not just including the family, but having her first and right there. You know, let's hear from Kelsey before we even delve in what this was like for her. That was really touching and moving.
And she really is an excellent writer. She told me when I first met her, before the book was even a thought, about how she loved to write and how it was healing for her. And I thought about her writing the foreword and she said yes. And I was so grateful that she did. And it just shows you hear her when she also tracked it, the loss, such a loss of her sister, not just a sister, but her best friend. And Lauren, I know that you met the families. Not only did you meet them, but they really appreciated and still do what you do and your work. And that meant so much because there is, believe it or not, for those who don't know this, vitriol in the true crime space. I don't know. We could talk for hours about how that came about. And
let's talk. We can talk.
Yeah. Yes. And it's not, I'm just going to open this. But early on with Kelsey, of course, she wasn't expecting any of this. She was thrown into this whirlwind, if you will. She was on Dr. Phil soon after, and this crime got a lot of attention, Lauren, as you know, because of what Libby caught on her phone, the man on the bridge and the walking and the voice. So it's rare that you get in a case like this to hear who authorities believed. At the time, first, they just wanted to talk to that person, and then they believed that he was involved, whoever bridge guy was. And it's rare that you're able to hear the voice of someone you believed murdered those girls. And Mike early on, and I repeat this because it stuck with me, Libby's grandfather, who she was living with, said, Susan, I really think she was going to come home and say, Grandpa, look at this creepy guy that we saw on the bridge. Mm-hmm. And that never happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that's exactly what she would have done. Right.
Yeah. So after that of he could be in this room and the change of direction, I remember Detective Holman calling me, and it's so good to see him at the trial. It really is full circle. I know he's poured his heart into this investigation, but he did call me. We did a special when I got back, HLN did, and we had all these guests, attorneys, former FBI, in a circle panel on set. And he said, Susan, give me a call when you can. So I called him and he joked and he said, you sure mention the FBI a lot. And I said, well, you don't talk to me about anything. And he said, well, you know, that was our idea, not theirs, the press conference. So, and I thought, oh my gosh, well, who's that? So, and now knowing what I know now and looking back, it was kind of this break, which obviously I think happens a lot more than we know. You see it in the movies, but a break of like, okay, who has control? Who's in control of this investigation? And we found out now that Superintendent Doug Carter, who testified at the trial, said that, yes, he did say, okay, FBI are free of your services for us. But he said they knew that they could call them at any time to pitch in. But the day-to-day investigative process was really with Indiana State Police.
You know, I have so many questions for you. You know, as you know, I watched from the public. I saw you reporting on it. I watched, I learned about this crime with the public. And it wasn't until the arrest in 2022 that I jumped on it as a podcaster and started reporting on what I was seeing. I have so many questions for you. I feel like you need to write a sequel to the book post the trial, by the way. I hope you do.
Well, once I was able to write the book or knew that I was going to write the book, I thought, oh my gosh, do I know how to write a book? And it was harder than anything I've ever done because it's not what I was used to. It's really kind of you. And it's clearly a story that I knew the people. So I wanted it to be exactly right. And going through my notes and having this stack and feeling overwhelmed. And I was felt like Tom Hanks talking to a volleyball in my room. I stayed in my room for 5 months every single day. My son was like, please don't write another book. But
I've heard that about writing a book. You just, you hunker down and you don't talk and you don't eat and you just.
And it's on my end, I was the type of person in college, I'd cram and even high school the night before. So I squeezed in what should have been writing each day into like 5 months. It just wrote. But I knew the story and I remember sending Becky a chapter and saying, what do you think of this? And what do you think of, because I wanted them to know, I asked Becky what she thought of it. And I wanted them to know that this is the perspective I'd be taking from their point of view, not from any other point of view. And really, I did talk about the investigation too, but it was never my intent or who I am as a person, period, to try to investigate this murder, these murders, the horrific murders. But it wasn't my thing to do. There are people out there that Deanna Thompson, I was lucky enough to interview for part of the book. She's in Don't F with Cats, that Netflix show. And she has the investigative skill that I just didn't want the perspective to be from that angle because that's not what I did or do.
It's a wonderful book and you really did put the family angle in. I recommend it to anyone. I find it interesting as a journalist, you really delved into this case, as you say, this sort of became your human interest case. In other words, you would go from crime to crime. As you say, it never gets easier. You just put your game face on. We do what we do. And this one really grabbed you and you could not let this go. You sort of explained why you went to dinner. You met the Patties, you met the families. Tell me about, what we just concluded this trial. What was it like seeing this through a sort of your story and being there, knowing the families, being so involved, having written a book, watching this trial play out? Because I have to say this, as I pointed out, I came on this later, right, than you. This was a trial unlike any trial I've ever reported on.
Me too.
What are your thoughts seeing this through?
Well, we're great. I know you are too. It just comes with the job of compartmentalizing. You have to. So you could cover certain stories and that's what you're able to do. But with this, and I mentioned this in the book, is that for the first time I felt like I was on their side of the camera and not my side because you're protected by that. And you move on and you move on and you move on and you move on. It doesn't mean you're not empathetic. It just means that it's the next news cycle.
It's and your job. So, you do what you do.
Exactly. And I've even gotten criticized for this a lot for being on that side, but I thought, well, it's a perspective I'm taking and, nonchalant now, but like sometimes it does bother me or it did.
I imagine.
And I always go back to like, all right, it's not about you. It's never about me. It's about these families. And I just was sensitive to it. And you know what? The bottom line is I just cared. They invited me in and I cared. I cared what happened to them. I cared about the horrific day to day that they would have to go through without the girls. And I think it was being in their homes. And I was at Abby's home as well with her grandmother, Diane, showing me photo albums and seeing Abby's sneakers and her cat, Bongo, her black cat and her swing set. Mm-hmm. It's like they were just there. So that's what was so heart-wrenching. And if you don't, so it's easy to hide behind a computer and say, and implicate family members, which is gross, but to do that when you don't know them, and then they're almost not human to you. And you could, I don't say easy, and I'm not saying everybody does this. All you need is a select few. But that's hurtful. And so I guess it was me becoming close to them and getting to know them on a different level. But I do remember what Paul Holes told me. This was CrimeCon in Las Vegas, and this is before anyone was arrested. I believe it was 2021. Okay. It was September, I believe. No, that was Orlando. So this is Las Vegas. And on
this
stage,
was Las Vegas. I was there too. I think it was 20.
Oh, you were?
2021? Yeah. Orlando was after, right?
Yep. So I wish I could have met you then.
Yes.
Yeah. And Paul Holes did say, first of all, he's a wonderful person and his level of being able to detect things and see things that we don't is unprecedented, clearly. But he is modest. And I remember him saying, Susan, are you sure they don't mind if I'm on stage with you? And I'm thinking, because they did invite me to speak with them to be the host of the panel. And I said, let me check with Mike. I said, Mike, what do you think about Paul Holes being on stage? And, you know, he's not that slick kind of a guy that maybe people think he is. He's really modest and kind. And the reason I asked that way is because I didn't want the families, because it's their dialogue and it's whatever they want to say to help get the word out there. And he said, and Mike is funny. He said, I'll think about it. He said, yeah, you can have him on. And just, I think he added so much and of course told the family what he thought. And I saw Mike really kind of zoning in on Paul Holes. But he did say this, once someone is arrested, it just doesn't go away. It's not because they were looking for someone for so long, mm-hmm. handing out flyers. They worked tirelessly. But he said that it'd be a new mourning period, a different sense of mourning. And you would look at this person, whoever it was, person or persons at that time, and say, is that the last person they saw? And it's a different type of emotional roller coaster. And I saw that once someone was arrested, Richard Allen, it looked like someone took the wind out of Becky's sails. She looked depleted. And she's always a go-getter, go, 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 go. Yeah. And each family, for those who don't know the story as well as we do, the families were very different. Abby's family is more kind of reserved. And when Mike did his first press conference before I met the families, this was March, I believe, 7th. Right after it happened, 2017. And mm-hmm. he said, please don't contact Abby's family. You can go through me. And he thanked the media. And he read a letter from the family on their mm-hmm. behalf. And that's when he kind of knew, okay, Mike's at the head of this right now. And Abby's family is handling this different because, of course, every family is different.
Every family is different, right.
And I think that's true about the trial. I think now it's a different period of mourning for them that he was found guilty. I know the sentencing is December 20th, but so he was found guilty. Now what? The girls still aren't in their homes. The laughter's gone. The moment's gone. They will forever. I remember interviewing Kim Goldman's father, and he said, Susan, forever Ron Goldman will be that age, 25 to me, and never grow old. And that's true. There were milestones with Libby's friends, and they got to decorate their own parking space in high school. And she never got to do that. And now that Kelsey's a mom to a little girl who's so cute, and she's pregnant again with a girl, she won't be able to have those experiences and meet Kelsey's daughter. So every milestone, it's always this hole in their heart. So I think that probably is what they're going through now.
This Christmas, you can give the gift that brings a lasting impact by giving someone a lifetime membership to Rosetta Stone. With 25 different languages, all 50% off for a lifetime membership and no shipping fees, you can give your family and friends the gift that keeps on giving. For 30 years, Rosetta Stone has been the trusted expert with millions of users. Users of Rosetta Stone can conveniently get bite-sized language lessons from wherever they are using their phone or computer. Do not put off learning that language. There is no better time than right now to get started. And today, Hidden True Crime listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. When making savings decisions, I want to know where my money is going. Acorns allows me to have that clarity. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for you, your kids, and your retirement. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. If you've ever wanted to start an IRA, Acorns has got you covered to get a good start. Open an Acorns Later IRA now and get up to a 3% match on new contributions. Who doesn't love extra retirement money? Something I love about Acorns is they allow you to see projected growth on their website. Simply go online, type in how much money you'd put in, and see the potential future balance of your account. Head to acorns.com/hiddentruecrime or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today.
paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/hiddentruecrime.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. If you haven't finished shopping, or if you're like me and maybe you haven't even started, do not stress. I have the perfect solution. Uncommon Goods is the best place to find unique gifts. Whether you have an aunt who loves to try new recipes, a husband who loves the NFL, or a child who loves science projects, Uncommon Goods has you covered. Uncommon Goods looks for high quality, often handmade products from artists and small businesses, and they donate $1 from every purchase to a nonprofit of your choice, donating over $3 million to date. Get 15% off your next gift. Go to uncommongoods.com/hiddentruecrime. That's uncommongoods.com/hiddentruecrime for 15% off. Do not miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. You know, if I were them, I don't know how they handled what they did during the trial. Watching them from far, you know, there's a gag order. There's conspiracy theories. There's lies. There's people accusing family members of things still, you know, years later, 7 years later. I felt the angst. I feel like if I had been them, I would have screamed and been so upset. I just want to thank you again. I think in this situation, because of that, they really did rely on trusted reporters and people like you. Did you sense that? Or
I did.
And you can share about that.
I did. I feel like Becky speaking, especially, I know that CrimeCon, if you're not familiar with what that is, and Lauren, maybe you've discussed it, but it's where victims' families and can come together and either get the word of the case out there, or it's just people, the audience members are people who love true crime or want to help or just are really engaged. And I know for those who don't know, it sounds weird, CrimeCon, but you don't dress up. It's not like Comic-Con, but I found it to be, before my first year there, it was New Orleans. I think 2019 was my first year with the families, and I didn't know what to expect, and I wasn't sure how I was going to do public speaking. I was so nervous, but the crowd is so warm and welcoming. It's unlike anything I've ever experienced. It's a wonderful crowd, and that is where I know Kevin Balfwell, and he's one of the guys who first started this, put this on with the Red Seat Ventures. And I do believe that Kelsey found solace there, was able to connect. That to me is what I found the most of. You're able to connect with people who really know how you feel, really can say, my sister was murdered too. Where else can you find that? So I think, and Becky has said to me, that really helped Kelsey to be able to, okay, now I'm an advocate. I have purpose. She didn't die in vain. These girls did not die in vain. So I believe that Becky found that to be healing as well. And I know that during that particular CrimeCon, Diane was there too, Abby's grandmother on stage, talking about, she said, look, I can't change something. What happened? I'll never be able to bring Abby back. She said, my heart's broken for my daughter. That was her only daughter, Abby's mom, she was talking of. So it was just kind of the stages and the heartbreak that they go through and all the missed timeline, everything on the timeline, all the missed kind of milestones that they go through. So I think that she found that healing. And by no means am I the only journalist that the families have spoken to. And I know throughout this, before the gag order, Rafael Sanchez comes to mind, a trusted, he's local Indiana. And we got to see them at the trial. So there were people that they trusted. And, you know, Becky's a very forgiving person and a kind person. I can't stress that enough. And so is Mike. And so is Diane. But she's open to say, she'll come up to you and say, hey, how are you? She'll remember everyone's name. And so I think that she felt that was kind of healing for her throughout. And I think once the gag order is lifted, maybe she won't, but maybe she would like there is no such thing as closure. I've learned that throughout. But I'm sure that she'll speak again and talk about her experience.
Yeah, they were so brave in the courtroom too. You know, they were there to witness everything. They were so strong to you know, even some of those hardest photos to look at. And I would look over and they were there just being so strong, bearing witness to their you know, their granddaughter, their sister. It was, I am so impressed by this family and what they have been warriors for these girls.
Were you there when Cicero was on the stand?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I was there taking us through.
When Cicero was on the stand, the blood expert, mm-hmm. is it Major Patrick Cicero? And that was the day, because getting into court was a whole other situation that everyone had to go through. And that's how I feel like I know Lauren so much more so than I would if we could just walk into court.
I'm grateful. We got to know each other. If we say the line, we all bonded.
I mean, if we could just walk in, that's a whole, topic within itself.
Yes.
But that was the day I had a media badge. You're like the chosen one, but it would rotate. And then it was out of the media pool, but that was the day that I took notes. And so you're in the front row and that's the day that I'm the pool reporter. So I knew that everyone would be looking at my notes. Now, I wasn't used to writing for hours and hours and getting every quote, and I had highlighters and I'm trying to do my best. And it was Cicero. So you're paying attention to every single word. And I had seen him on the stand at a hearing at the end of July, beginning of August. And I knew that it was heart-wrenching to hear him. It truly was. He was on the stand and they're showing images. And I had yet to see the crime scene photos at this particular mm-hmm. point. Maybe they showed one in court. I'm not sure if before that, but this was up close.
Yeah.
And the technology, they weren't that savvy in the courtroom. And so it was almost like a big iPad that was shown, not a TV screen. So if you touched it, it would zoom in. And Cicero got up and he touched it and it zoomed in and it was Libby, like with blood on her face. And it's so horrible. And
there was an audible gasp at that moment in the courtroom. And
I know you know this because I hear that a lot, the audible gasp. And sometimes I'm wondering, was there, or is that just in writing? This there was when he talked about the blood across Libby's face. And I'm sorry to be graphic, but it was up, you would see. And then he talked about kind of how that could occur. And he believed she was dragged by one arm a couple of yards. And he was talking about like a mark on her face. And he said, without the presence of water, I took down the quote, that would coincide with what would be a tear. He was basically saying it was a tear. And that was the gasp, Lauren. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was so like, it really was. Oh my gosh, because I remember Becky saying to me, I hope she didn't suffer. Well, a tear says she knows what was going on. She knows. So that was like, oh my gosh, I'll never forget that day. And not that I wouldn't have paid attention where I was sitting. I probably wouldn't have seen as much, but it was just, I'll never forget that moment ever. And I can't imagine being the families and seeing that.
Right. And that front row, to explain to everyone, when you're the pool reporter taking notes, again, usually being a pool reporter means you get to have audio or a video and then you just hand it over. You're in charge of actually handwritten notes. You are sitting on the front row where you can hear the best. Each row back is harder to hear. You know, I express that to our listeners multiple times. You know, you can't hear. So you're that day, in other words, you're there, you're front and center, you're hearing and seeing everything.
Everything's elevated, right? Which I've covered a lot of court cases. I've never been in a courtroom that long for the whole entire trial. Even if it mm-hmm. was for CNN or HLN, I'd go in for a couple of days, come back.
The news cycle. The news cycle, you've got to get everything done. Yeah.
Exactly. And when it was Casey Anthony, let's say it was Mike Alanos, who I worked with, he was there, or Sandusky, he was in the courtroom. So for me to be there every single day, and you know, court cases, they have ebbs and flows, and a day could be, for lack of a better word, boring if you're talking about DNA or lack thereof and the scientific aspects and the bullet and the markings on an unspent bullet. Mm-hmm. So, but this day everything was elevated, and I didn't realize in a courtroom, and maybe it was because it was Carroll County, I'm not sure, but the acoustics, you couldn't hear anything in the back, especially. Right. I think that Judge Gold changed that a little bit, and McClellan would always stand up and say, you have to project your voice. And I remember it was, there was someone on the stand that finally spoke really close to the mic. I'm like, that, because it can be an issue if you're trying to hear and listen to everything. But that day was elevated for me and so horrific.
Yeah. No, thank you for sharing that and explaining how that happened. And yes, we got to know each other through the line. You're right. Had you been able to get it in access every day?
You might have mentioned this, but you lined up and everyone had to get in, and I would never want to talk about it inside because I felt like we were complaining and we weren't allowed to talk, but if we could at a moment where Judge Gold wouldn't be mad at us, I didn't want to seem like I was complaining because once you get in, you're like, okay, you can exhale and you're like, this is a double murder trial of two young girls. You never forgot that, but you didn't want to complain about anything. Nothing. Well, slowly but surely word got out and this just tells you who they are to the families, and they brought food in the middle of the night, pizza, you name it. Becky was telling me that Tara, Libby's aunt, would swing by food. I mean, they cared about us. And some people on that line weren't that nice to the families, but they brought pizza anyway. So that just
tells right. Kind of exactly. A lot of people there were not nice to the family, and they were still bringing food to us at 4 a.m. and at 5 a.m. in the morning.
It was just shows you who they are. Incredible. And once you got in, and I know, Lauren, you know this, and then so there'd be a morning break, and then there was a lunch break. You had to go back down and line up again. At times, I felt like I was at Rikers, and you don't want to make a false move or you're in trouble. I would
right, right. And then if you think you're safe, there was one day, I don't know if you were there that day, there was one day I thought I was safe. I had hit every goalpost.
Yeah.
I had been there since it was pitch black outside. I had line sitters. We were up, you know, there's this line, there's a line outside, and there's a line getting in. Then there's a line at the top of the stairs. And then once you're there and they count you, you're like good to go, right? And I was in that line, and all of a sudden I was like, I have to go to the bathroom right now. I actually didn't feel well. So I was nauseous. I was like,
I was there.
You were there. So that's what people don't realize either is I had already like used the restroom for, I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, TMI, but like, I was like, I'm going to throw up right now. Like, and I just like ran to the restroom and I came back out. Right. And he was like, back of line. And I was like, but
this deputy, 99% of them were nice. Right.
And he was nice too. I was like, I understand. Well, I respect
him. Really? He was not nice. And I remember, okay, so that day, this guy was mean and he was angry at something and you just ran up, but he acted like you just ran up from outside and didn't spend the whole night outside. And he's like, no.
I spent the whole night there. I was like, but.
I'm thinking, oh no, God, no, because she's been on this line. So we get in, you finally got in that day, right?
I did. I was the last one in.
Yeah. Did he say sorry or anything?
I have a bad habit of like wanting to explain myself. And so I was like, no, I was here. And he didn't want to hear it. Right. He didn't want to hear it. But I was like, but you don't understand. Back a line. So after everybody went in, I stopped my bad habit. And I was just like, I understand. I respect you. Think, you know, and he softened a bit and he's like, okay, you've got one spot in there. And
a lot of these deputies work in the prisons, in the jail. So it would be like if we were prisoners talking back. They don't want to hear it. They don't
want to hear the excuse. They don't want to hear the excuse.
And they don't care. Everything we've just been venting about, then they don't care. Judge Girl doesn't care. And I understand it. She's been burned, but this was excessive. So she was on the stand one day and she said, I understand. And the jury, she was very kind to the jurors, of course, and they were out of the room. And she's like, I hear that people can't hear. Essentially, I'm paraphrasing. I don't care. I only care about the jury and the pool reporters. I don't care about anyone else, clearly, because they kept moving the goalpost. So we'd line up and then we'd line up again and then you'd line up again. And there was one day Kevin and Anya from Murder, She were outside. It was just a cutoff and I saw Anya's face. And I got to know Kevin and Anya at the hearing in July and then at the jury selection in Fort Wayne.
Podcast. Murder, She, it's a podcast.
Wonderful. So I feel like they're my best friends because once you've gone through all of that and I've been waiting in line with them. So I just come out. It was not the same day with you, but it was the same guy. And I said, excuse me, there's two more seats in there. And he goes, okay. He goes, worry about your own seat. And I just scurried in. I'm like, okay. I'm
like, you're like, I know. Do I push? Do I do this? Do I not? Is it going to be a good day? Is it a bad day?
I saw Anya's face. If this was after what happened to you, I wouldn't have made a false move, but I didn't know yet. So I'm like, oh, excuse me. This guy's massive. I mean, he's like, worry about your own seat. I'm like,
got it. And there was one day where Anya actually didn't get in. And sometimes Anya and Kevin would, you know, say, I'll go in and you stay out. But there's one moment which also shows how people really came together. Mm-hmm. And Anya didn't make it. I don't think either of them were in. And someone stood up. It was Anthony. And he stood up and he's like, you can have my seat. You're a better reporter than I am. And he got up and left.
So nice of Greeno. And he lent me his phone one day. But that was right. People started, you were sticking together on that line, most everyone, because you're all going through the same thing to get in there. So needless to say, it'll be interesting to see what happens at the sentence hearing. But it was, how many days was the trial? Was it 19? It depended on if you consider jury selection, but it was day in and day out. And on your topic, what you first mentioned was the families were there for everything. 63 plus pieces of evidence, witnesses on the stand. And like
throwing that Kelsey's pregnant too. Oh, there goes my pillow. But
every day. The only time she wasn't was when her daughter was sick, but it was every day to see this and hear this, but they promised they'd be there and they were. And this is a very small courtroom, a beautiful courtroom, very small.
Tall. I know people get confused tall. And one big in some ways, tall, big, bad acoustics,
room, but like right, tall, right. Beautiful, but the seats were limited. And so Becky was concerned there wouldn't even be enough seats for her family members to come. So they're a lot.
Susan, I want to ask, I don't want to take up too much of your time. We're so grateful that you're here and we know how busy you are. I think one of the big things that as a podcaster and YouTuber and someone reporting at the trial was I was just so surprised at varying views and opinions as we're all hearing that are fair. But can I ask you where you are and how you feel about this verdict?
Yeah,
I saw you on Tom Webster's show too, so I know you're talking about.
And I know me on Tom Webster's show. I interrupted too many people. I was at my wit's end. We could leave that out, but I was like, "F this."
Okay, we were all on our wit's end at some point, so that's fair to say. You can talk about that.
I was like, "Fuck this!" I'm like, "There's fucking QAnon crime people out there because it's Tom's show." I was like, "I'm saying whatever I want," but. I'm like, we're not tiptoeing around this anymore. I was losing it like Jack Nicholson in my room. But
I lost it a few times. There were tears. Yeah. That's why I wanted to have you on. I'm like, come talk about what we just went through.
And real quick, before I answer, my husband was in here setting up, and I'm so glad you said, like, I've never experienced something like that because I saw his face. Because I've been telling him, like, you have no idea. And to hear it from you, like, you just have no idea. So, all right.
And I've sat through full murder trials before. This was, and they're all hard. They're all hard. There was just this unique aspect.
Make this shit up if you try. It's so fucking nuts. I think I do have PTSD. All right.
I know. That's what I'm trying to tell people. So I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad I can validate you and your husband her, because it's really hard to explain to people. Does anyone wish that healthy eating was just easier? Like, I don't even want to think about it, but this is why I started using meal kits from Sunbasket. The kits are delivered straight to my door with all of the ingredients and easy to follow recipes. I can choose my own meals, but I actually let Sunbasket create my family menu for me. Again, I don't even want to think about this. They know my dietary requests, carb conscious and dairy free, plus my requests for less than 20 minutes of prep time. On the menu this week, pork lettuce cups, sweet potato chili, and shepherd's pie. The meats are antibiotic-free, the produce from hand-picked farms. Sunbasket also offers pre-made meals with zero prep or mess. They make a dinner faster than takeout and much healthier. Go to sunbasket.com/hiddentruecrime today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/hiddentruecrime to save $120 across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. These days, things impacting my hormones feels like an endless list. And after talking to friends, I know that I'm not alone. It is so frustrating to figure out how to feel like myself again. And sometimes just when we think we're on top of it, perimenopause or menopause hits and it's like starting all over again. But Hormone Harmony is a formula I've been taking daily. It contains herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, the beauty about adaptogens, they help the body adapt to stress, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout our lives. Symptoms such as night sweats, poor sleep, racing thoughts, low mood. In the 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony, there's a repetitive thing women keep saying: they feel like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HiddenTrueCrime at checkout. That's happymammoth.com. Use code HiddenTrueCrime for 15% off today.
shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Crocs, Old Navy Outlet, American Eagle Outfitters, Kay Jewelers, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com. Big time deals on big name brands.
I laid in bed for 2 days and I felt like I've been beat up. I never felt that before. And I've done morning shows my whole career. And I was like, I can't move. And I didn't lift a weight, not do one exercise in 30 days. So it was crazy. All right, I'll answer that question. Okay. So my belief is they do have the right guy. Do I feel like there were mistakes made within the investigation? Yes. Do I feel like that everyone did the best they could with the resources they had and the knowledge they had? Yes. I believe that Richard Allen was the biggest piece of evidence. His word, I believe Richard Allen. And if you believe Richard Allen and he says he was there at that particular time, soon after the murders, I believe it was 2 days later, he came forward to Dan Doolin in that grocery store parking lot and said, I was there. I was there. Then again, in 2022, during the interviews, I thought that was a huge day when Liggett was talking to him and the investigator, Steve Mullen, and he said, I was there. What were you wearing? And he said the same outfit. So I believe, or something similar. And I know everyone in Indiana has that kind of uniform, if you will. But I believe that he was the evidence that they needed to convict. Was I surprised that there was no DNA? Yes, but I don't think that I'm not an expert by any means, not even close, of when DNA is there, when it's not. Was the person wearing gloves? But I do believe that the jury, I thought it was I saw it from jury selection. That was the first time I witnessed jury selection. I'm so glad I did. I learned so much. I'm so grateful that they were sequestered because of all the information surrounding this. And I'm so grateful they were from that county and not from Delphi. People are just, as you would understand it, too close. But for those who think that Richard Allen didn't get a fair trial, I believe that he did. And I believe it may have been, I believe it was a disservice to not have at least the audio out there so everyone can make judgments on them on their own and hear all of the confessions. Do I believe that he should have been in that prison? Absolutely not. I think the defense had something to argue there. And I think they argued it. They did a good job. I truly believe that. But do I feel like it was beyond a reasonable doubt that Richard Allen killed Abby and Libby? 100% yes.
Thank you for sharing that. I agree. He shouldn't have been there, but mm-hmm. It doesn't change the evidence and mistakes were made, and it doesn't change the evidence. I see it the way you see it. I trust this jury. They deliberated. They listened. They took notes.
The questions were amazing.
The questions, I know.
You knew that they, not only were they listening, but some of their questions, I'm like, these people are highly intelligent.
I was like, wait, what?
I don't even know what they asked.
I'm just thinking of lunch. And you guys are like, what did you just get?
And you could kind of sense, like, based on their particular jobs, kind of what they knew. And I forgot as we went along kind of what each person did for a living or their expertise. But you could clearly sense that they knew what they were talking about with these questions and with the DNA and the ballistics and just the questions. I really thought that gave us a look inside of how they were thinking throughout the trial. And I think that all states should adopt that, because imagine if you and I, Lauren, were on a jury and then we had to go back and deliberate after 375 pieces of evidence and 62 witnesses, I'd think, oh my gosh, what are my questions? So to be able to ask throughout and get those answers, I think were helpful in the deliberation time. But I will say, nothing is a slam dunk. I had no idea what the outcome would be. And people can guess. We did that with Jodi Arias, Casey Anthony, Scott Peterson. Oh, is it too soon? They're out this long. That means they're locked. It's going to be a mistrial. But you never really know. So I had no idea. And when it went into Monday, but it just showed you how much time they took. And how they each had a folder with all of their notes in there. And it shows, I'm curious to see what the breakdown was or what they all thought. Maybe one day we'll hear that, but it was interesting to see the whole process. And I believe they came to the right conclusion.
You know, I want to say I agree with you that I believe that if there had been audio or something from the courtroom, it would have helped. I think that was part of why this trial was so hard, was it felt there was a sort of heaviness of like, we have to relay this information and what everybody's hearing and what they're relaying is, it was broad and it was confusing. And I agree that it was a disservice to the public. I think this is one reason that as journalists, we believe in transparency. I understand why Judge Gull, you know, made her choices and I respect her decisions. But again, I think that had people been able to listen for themselves, I agree with you. I think it would have helped the entire process. I want to ask you really quickly about jury selection, because I was not there at jury selection. And there are a lot of questions about these jurors. How well did they know about this case? Can you give us, I mean, I know you don't remember each one maybe individually, but overall, your feeling about this jury?
Yeah. Well, my father's an attorney, and I said, I'm going to jury selection. And he said, why? It's kind of a mundane process to go. And he didn't realize I had never seen it, or maybe he just thought it's not that important in terms of the process, I think, as he's seen it so often, clearly. But because HLN, of course, at CNN, you didn't show that. You don't want to show the juror. So it was interesting for me. But they did the question that was asked, and it was by Judge Gull. How many of you have heard about this case? And at first I saw them hesitant, and then a lot of them raised their hand in the group that was brought up. So that there was a whole section that was brought up. They sat down kind of where we were sitting, but this was Allen County, a much bigger courtroom. And then they would be called up, I believe maybe 12 at a time. And then they were asked questions, and then McClelland would go up and ask questions. And then Rosie or Baldwin would ask questions. And then they'd go back to their desks and kind of write out notes of like, who scratching out thing. And Richard Allen was involved, like, no, yes, no. We didn't know why they picked a particular person. But then after that, Judge Gull would say, juror number two, you're excused. Juror number 16, you're excused. So they would kind of leave the room, and then the next group was brought up. But a lot of people had heard about the case. Another question was, how many of you are law enforcement or have relatives who are? A lot of people raise their hand. And it was, okay, you've heard about the case. And then Judge Gull would say, juror number two, how much, tell us about that. Well, I heard about it just in passing at the dinner table, but does that mean you can make a fair decision? Will that impact how you decide or what you think of this case? Can you be fair and impartial? And this person said, I can be. And so that would not get them excused because it's still Indiana. I mean, people heard about it around
the country. This case.
Yeah. And so that was interesting for me. But this one woman and Judge Gull said, look, we want you to be truthful. And McClelland was the first one up. He said, I don't care. I want you to tell me the truth so I can make the best decisions for this case for Richard Allen. But Judge Gull would say, another step was they read off their witness list. And do you know any of these people? Yes or no? If you do, raise your hand if you don't. And this woman was in the front row and back to head. She heard about the case. She said, I have heard about it. Well, how? Well, I started a Facebook group and I already made my decision of guilt or innocence. You do? Yes. Well, would that change? No. So she was excused. And someone said, raised his hand. Is there any issue, Judge Gull said, of why you couldn't serve on this jury? And one guy raised his hand and he said, I was unemployed for so long, I finally got a job and I'd be worried about it. Is that where your mind would be? Would you be listening to the case or would you be worried? He said, worried. He was excused. There was one guy, I haven't seen this. I haven't seen any jury selection before, but it was, raise your hand, sir. He said, yes. He said, I'm a psychic. I could really be used as a witness for the prosecution, but I'm a psychic. And okay, so we're on break and I walk out and he's excused and he walks next to me, said, I can hear Richard Allen's heartbeat in there. I said, oh, and ran to the bathroom. So
you talked to him even. I had heard of that story. That's interesting. Yeah.
And then one more, there was a guy in his 30s in front row, kind of leaning back. And I'm like, oh my God, can he just be respectful? And he was answering so in a rude manner, but kind of funny. And then he just, is there any reason you can't? And he raised his hand saying, please don't put me on this case. I don't want to be on this, please. And it did get a laughter in court. And she said, I don't want to do it. And she said, well, then we don't want you to do it because they don't want someone on there. And there were, of course, women and men with kids, little kids. So any issue you could think of, they want people who can serve and whose mind will be fully in. And I think being sequestered, although it was probably excruciating, considering we're all on our phones, they couldn't use them unless a deputy was standing by, or they could write work emails with a deputy right there. Although I'm sure it was difficult for them, I think it helped them come to the conclusion that they did and be a fair and impartial jury. But I think seeing that process was eye-opening for me in a good way.
Thank you for sharing that. No, I appreciate that. A jury that we can trust, then, in other words, they did their due diligence. Okay. And a variety. I was surprised by, as far as diversity goes, not very diverse as far as ethnicity goes, but it's Indiana and it's one county.
Jury of your peers, right?
Older, it's a jury of younger. Your peers. Mm-hmm.
And you were trying to assess, like, what are they thinking? You could never tell. The only thing I noticed with the jury is the one guy on the top row always scanning the crowd, like always looking around and taking in the surroundings and looking at how people reacted to things. And there's one thing I do want to say for those who think Richard Allen did not get a fair trial. That's what the appeals process is for. Do I think he'll get one? Not necessarily. But again, there were mistakes made, but I believe they do have the right guy. And there was overwhelming amount of circumstantial evidence. But I always say, why would the family want the wrong guy in custody? That would mean that a child killer was out there. Right. And if you think maybe, oh, someone else was involved, back to Paul Holes, on his assessment, and his history will show you, he knows what he's talking about, it's that usually men like this work alone. And if he didn't, he would have mentioned that other person, I believe, by now. It's very rare that, you know, you can convince a guy to maybe rob a bank, but to do something like this, it's far-fetched. But again, I wouldn't want the wrong person in custody, of course. And if Richard Allen was innocent and I felt that, I would say that too. But I believe he is guilty.
Yeah. Yeah. The evidence, I sat there listening with an open mind, and the evidence led me to the same place. Law enforcement got a lot of flack at this trial. There were mistakes made, but as you shared in your book, and I want to bring up your book again, but in your book, you got to know these law enforcement personally. You were at that 2019 press conference with Doug Carter. Can you tell us a little bit about your thoughts on law enforcement in this case?
I just think, and speaking of Doug Carter, I think he's a class act, and there's really no one like him that I've ever met in terms of different stories. And he always took the brunt of everything. He did interview after interview after interview. And he would always say, Susan, I can't say what I think. I can only say what I know. And right now, we can't tell you everything we know for the integrity of the investigation. And again, there were mistakes made. And when someone was in custody, it was October 31st, 2022, I did a panel. And he came on, and again, very modest. He said, I by no means am taking credit for this. There are people who put off retirement. As I mentioned in the book, some of the officers had their screensaver of Abby and Libby. They put their hearts and souls into this, and seeing what they saw, and now I know what they saw with the crime scene photos, this was very personal to them. It's a small community. And with Doug Carter, who I believe was leading this throughout, would always say, if it was something bad, take it out on me. And he said, Susan, how do you think I feel? And he wasn't feeling sorry for himself, but he did say, I have a grandfather, meaning Mike, asking me, why don't you have this guy? You know what he looks like. You know what he sounds like. Libby did her part. Do yours. At times, because he doesn't mince words. And he was saying, what is taking so long? What can I do? How can I help? And by no means were the family just following and not saying much. They were involved and they wanted this solved just as much as anyone. And I'm grateful that Richard Allen did come forward and talk about what he wore. And I know that people say it's a small town. Even my father, who I mentioned, an attorney, would say, why can't they get the guy? He's on the bridge. He has that outfit on. And I said, well, Dad, it's very small. And I feel like everyone has that outfit, and the face was blurry. But I believe that Libby, in the closing arguments, Nick McClelland, and then the rebuttal of closing, so he has the final word, said that Libby always wanted to solve crimes. She did. She was interested in that. And he said, and she did her own, which was so touching. Oh my gosh.
I know. That moment, I will not forget. I want to bring up your book one more time, Susan, Down the Hill. It is an incredible book. If you guys want to understand this case and how it affected this town and the families and the details, this is the book. And I just want to thank you for writing it and for caring about this case. And I think there's a moment in a journalist's life where a story becomes bigger and it becomes a human interest story more. So you realize and you have to delve in and you have to do your part when you see something that needs a little bit more attention. And you certainly did that when you told this story. And for that, I thank you. You've taught me a lot. Again, like I always say, I jumped in and I looked to people like you, as I say, the experts, to help me understand. John and I did all the research we possibly could, listened to all the podcasts, talked to as many people as we could before, but we weren't there, you know, in 2019. We weren't there in 2017. And so I just want to thank you for caring about this enough that you you did this. You were doing interviews every day. Oh, and one last story. I want to apologize. I was going live after the verdict. I jumped out and I was going live in the car and, or not in the car. I was going live outside of the car. You were in our car using it because you had to do interviews, all these news interviews. You were doing news interview after. I felt so bad when you got out and you jumped the little corner, just so you know. I wasn't saying that Susan needs to get out of my car. I was kind of wandering around going like, okay, I'm going to find a spot. She's there. And then all of a sudden you jumped out and you, I was like, I felt so bad, but.
Well, speaking of you and John, I think you do an excellent job and your husband nails it. Cause we always ask the question, why did he do that? Or why did she do that? You never really get the answer you're looking for, but you can kind of analyze and you want to know the process. And I always ask, is it nature or nurture? You never really know. Yeah. It's not formulaic. You never get the answer you want, but I think you and your husband do an excellent job on your show and of just kind of pinpointing how this could have come about. And back to the car thing, I was on Nancy Grace and she could love her. She's passionate, but she was saying to the producer, I can't hear Susan. The wind is too loud. And I was like, oh my gosh. So then I just huddled in this, like, because I knew you.
I think I got a shot of you at the very end of my live. I'm like, there's Susan Hendricks. And you were sitting on the sidewalk in this little wind tunnel
And I should have clipped on a mic, but I didn't think of it. And everything was frantic, but I felt like, okay, the verdict is here. We have this. So it was a surreal moment for me. I was on the ground sitting there and never been so content going, okay, can you hear me? No wind. But that was funny. No, it was scrambling all around. And when the verdict came out, I know you were outside too, but one person screamed, we're all Richard Allens. And again, I want to point out there is such a divide here of fair trial or not fair trial.
Yeah.
And there's even podcasters that I listened to or watched, YouTubers who said, you know, going into this, I thought he was not guilty. Now I've heard from people inside the courtroom and I do believe that he is. But again, we wouldn't want the wrong person in prison. But I want to end on that you and your husband are doing such a great service by talking about everything that you saw in the courtroom, because of course there's no cameras or audio. So you're bringing that and then the analysis, which I love.
Thank you. Thank you, Susan. I appreciate this interview so much. Thank you for taking your time out of your morning to do this interview. And we will definitely be in touch. And again, I'm there to buy the sequel to your book too, the post-trial sequel, if you ever write it. But this book is incredible. And it's a book that if you want to understand this case, you start with Down the Hill by Susan Hendricks. So thank you so much, Lauren.
Thanks.
We'll see ya. So bye.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.